Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and as the biggest romantic holiday of the year, sometimes it can create overwhelming pressure and expectations on a couple to achieve the best sex ever. And my guest, once again, is Dr. Dudley Danoff. He is a urologist, president and founder of Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group in Los Angeles. And Dr. Danoff has been my guest, oh, Dr. D, how many times? Maybe four or five.
Well, we're having such fun. Who's counting?
This is one reason I like you.
How are you?
It's good to talk to you again.
Excellent.
And I've shared this on the air in a previous appearance of yours, but it was really very meaningful for me to hear you speak at our ASEC conference last June in Monterey, California, because I had read your book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, and it was just wonderful to hear you present, and it was so informative for our group. ASEC, listeners, stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And so you made quite a hit, Dr. Dudley Danoff.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. So we've got Valentine's Day coming up, and I thought we'd focus some on your Chapter 8, which is a wonderful chapter. The whole book is so informative. I've recommended it to so many of my clients, my patients, and with great effect. And do your book sales pick up a little bit just before Valentine's?
Oh, yes. They absolutely do. I mean, the number of radio interviews I do and television around Valentine's Day, I mean, they're breaking the doors down. I still have a busy urologic practice, and, the book is not my main deal. So
no, but I know. And honestly, Dr. D, I'm just always grateful that you put aside an hour for me, for the program Love, Lust, and Laughter.
Well, you do such a good job, Dr. Wiley, and you have the right touch between, science and emotion and feelings. So it's my pleasure. I enjoyed meeting you personally and talking with you and interacting with you, and I've never had a dull hour, not in the last three or four times I've been with you, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm so happy you feel that way, and it's mutual, of course. So your Chapter 8, Extenuating Circumstances, when sex becomes a chore, and you hear it in your practice as a urologist, I hear it a lot in my practice as a board-certified sex therapist. And I had heard the story before, but you write about it in your book, and it's a great story, The Coolidge Effect. Would you share that with our listening audience?
Yeah, it's an old study. Research has studied animal sexuality, and it really, I think, bespeaks very, very well to human behavior. So if you put a male mouse and a female mouse in heat in a cage, the male mouse will mount the female mouse with ever increasing what we call refractory periods, i.e., from one ejaculation to another, long and long periods of time, until the poor male mouse is exhausted and lying there with his mouse tongue out. Now, if you take the lady mouse out of the cage, and you paint her a different mouse color, and you spray her with some new, fresh, unique mouse perfume, and you put her back in the cage, the male mouse will wake up from near death, and will begin to mount the mouse as if nothing ever happened.
No, I think that's great. I love that study, and especially painting a female mouse's coat in a new color, it shows
so,
how...
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is that it's mm-hmm. something different. If you want to lighten up your sex life, if you want to improve desire, you always have to have something a little different, something a little sexy, something a little unique. But the most interesting thing is the way it was called the Coolidge effect. Is it was really named after President Calvin Coolidge. I mean,
yes,
he was
tell
a,
that story, Dr. D, please. That's such a good story.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was an austere conservative, and they called him Silent Cal. And he was visiting a hen farm, a chicken farm, with his wife. And he noticed an unusually large number of chicken and eggs, and he remarked that how few roosters there were in the barn, and the ones that were there must be prodigious, really prodigious studs.
Yeah.
So the farmer replied that roosters did their duty dozens of times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And Coolidge said, well, quote, you might point that out to Mrs. Coolidge said, the first lady said, you might point that out to Mr. Coolidge.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Silent Cal was not as prudish as his reputation suggested, and he asked the farmer if each rooster had to service the same old hen every time. And when the farmer told him that the roosters could mate freely with any hen they wanted, the president responded, you might point that out to Mrs. Coolidge.
Exactly, exactly.
So that's the Coolidge effect.
The Coolidge effect, yes. And you write, and this is part of the title of your chapter 8, that some of your patients think that something is physically wrong with them, and when the problem really is a matter of circumstances, not their penises.
Exactly.
And that you also point out so correctly that men are vulnerable to self-doubt when it comes to penis performance. So they immediately assume something is wrong with their anatomy. The boredom habituation thing is huge. It's huge for long-term couples.
Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why long-term relationships are relatively rare. I mean, we see certainly lots of them, but, you know, lately, they seem more the exception to the rule.
Yes.
And because it is very, very difficult to keep things exciting and young and fresh and different for a very long period of time. It takes a lot of imagination. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of passion.
And how about this? As I understand it, the brain produces dopamine, the hormone of arousal, when there's novelty.
Mm-hmm.
And so that a couple needs to be cognizant of that, and if they're in a long-term relationship that they want to be monogamous, they really need to mix it up. So play out their fantasies, dress in different sexy things, and of course, you write like a sex therapist in your book. You have lots of wisdom about this. But you also say in this chapter that one survey found that 51% of men fantasize about someone else during sex, while only 37% of women do. And that reminds me of a Rodney Dangerfield joke, bless his heart, he's passed on, but he and his wife were having trouble getting their sexual activity started, and he said, what's the matter, you can't think of anyone else either?
that's a good cartoon. That's excellent.
So, but this whole business of fantasizing, and it does help apparently more men than women.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think in the pornographic industry is much more male-dominated in terms of viewership than
mm-hmm.
female-dominated,
mm-hmm.
and because men are much more responsive to visual stimuli than women.
Yeah. So, but I think women can, some women who are open to it, can become more visually responsive. And this is where, in terms of pornography, I think that some of the female directors, producers, writers, like Candida Royale, who started in 1984 making, she doesn't even call them porn, she says making erotica for couples to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, she has a plot and good lighting and actors that often are real couples.
Right.
Because women are sensitive to this. They, well, how come this couple is fucking, as some say?
Yeah, right, I got it.
Because they like each other.
Right.
You know, they're in a relationship, and most male porn isn't like that.
Well, I don't hold myself out to be an expert on porn, but, I certainly get the gist and agree.
Yeah.
But certainly men are very stimulated by visual, much more so than women.
And so I think in terms of getting the dopamine going again and livening up a boring relationship, I mean, you talk about performance anxiety and watching the same woman undress many, many times over the years. The man might have been with her. So I think it's important for the woman to maybe, you know, you dress for success, you should dress for sex too, and wear
absolutely
pretty lingerie, and maybe do a striptease. And
we have to get that word out. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to be speaking to a big lingerie shop, high end lingerie, a week from Thursday, and talking about how to keep the passion in your sex life. And certainly one of the things to do, and it's hard for some women, but is to dress in pretty lingerie and, you know, find music you like. And
yeah, I'm speaking both as a man and as a seasoned urologic surgeon.
Yeah,
but
good.
Sure, men are suckers for a woman in beautiful clothing, or scents or sounds, or
mm-hmm.
I mean, people go to rarely go to Alaska for their honeymoon. They go to Hawaii where the waves are warm and the breezes are beautiful and the scent of the orchids is unbelievable. Those are the things that appeal to the senses.
Yeah, we need to think lots more about appealing to the senses. So let's go back to your book specifically, and you have you talk about the hard dick syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And you do talk about my studies, which we have already covered, and that's fascinating. But fear and performance anxiety is really huge. It's often a big penis deflator is the fear and anxiety.
Well, let's touch on the hard dick syndrome.
Yeah, so, okay, yes.
So,
define
I mean,
it.
You know, mm-hmm. there's no question that new equals exciting, and you know, whether it's a new car or a new song or a new partner, you know, nothing will revive a man more quickly and more vigorously than a new partner.
Yeah.
Preferably one who's young, attractive, receptive. So what happens, sometimes a male in a long-time relationship will be attracted to a younger, a prettier woman, and he'll have an erection, which is, my God, he says, I haven't had an erection like this in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he throws away a reliable, long-term relationship, fooled by the fact that he has a firm erection, firmer than he's had in years, gets involved with the new woman, and guess what happens after a while? The Coolidge effect.
Right.
What was new and exciting becomes old and tiring, and then he looks back and says, my God, you know, why did I leave a great relationship, a wife and three children, and a, you know, a beautiful house for this? So I say to men, beware of the hard dick syndrome. Just because your penis is firmer than it's been in years, don't think it's love, and don't throw away, you know, the house.
Right.
That's a very important concept.
It really is. And I like it that you are sometimes counseling your patients like a sex therapist. You talk about their personal lives. And,
yes. Well, and, because men, you know, most men are very reluctant to fess up. I mean, every man thinks he can throw that catch or throw the ball that was caught in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl there at the very, very end. Every man is a hero. Every man is macho. And if his penis is not getting erect or not responding to the way he thinks it is, he doesn't want to talk about it. He wants to keep it a secret. And there's no better person to talk about it than to his urologist. He's coming in for some other. So, yeah, we talk a lot about that to our patients and point out, look, what you're having here is normal. This is age-appropriate behavior. Or, gee, it sounds like there's something wrong. Let's check your serum testosterone. Let's do a prostate exam. We definitely get involved, but not as sex therapists per se. But, you know, by the way, this is my problem.
But at least you're talking. I hear from some of my patients, my clients, that their doctors won't talk to them.
Yeah, no,
you know,
that's
they'll
that's
even
wrong.
Prescribe Viagra or Cialis,
right.
And they won't give them instructions. Like it may take, you need to like your partner.
Right.
And you need a little extra stimulation from mouth or hand.
The reality of those drugs, which are called, the class is called PDE5 inhibitors,
right.
They increase the blood flow to the penis. The
right.
reality of those drugs, very important that your listeners understand this, very important concept. These are not drugs of desire. They are
right.
drugs of performance.
Yes.
They do not increase the desire. Now, when you take these medicines, you have to take them about an hour before, as I tell my patients, before you can fool around.
Right.
Number two, you must be stimulated. I mean, sexually stimulated. So if you take the pill and you lie down and look at the ceiling, nothing happens.
Exactly.
So those two things are very, very important with those drugs. So they are, you know, they are in a way, quote, miracle drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They are allowing men to have erections firm up for penetration, you know, into their older years when maybe hypertension and atherosclerosis
mm-hmm.
and diminished blood flow will prevent them from doing so. But there is another dimension to those pills.
Yes. But what I hear is that a lot of urologists are just not taking the time to or to talk to their patients. So you're exceptional. I mean, we already know that, Dr. D. I mean, you're exceptional in so many ways. But you do take the time, and then you wrote this book.
The reality is most urologists are very busy. I mean, we're overwhelmed
right.
with prostate cancer and bladder
right.
tumors and urinary tract infections and incontinence. So as my father once told me, he said, if you want to get a job done, you ask a busy man to do it. So I just, you know, got this enormous energy and had this idea to write this, you know, tongue-in-cheek, medically accurate, kind of funny book about sexuality.
Funny.
And, you know, then it took on a life of its own. So now I have to be very attentive to the life of my book and my ideas.
That's good. Plus, it's funny. And then you have so many cartoons with cartoons looking like penises and various characters. It's
well, I mean, it's silly and it's lighthearted. I thought it was refreshing. It's not a cartoon book.
But you need a lot of people who are kind of nervous about discussing sexuality
right.
need some humor or some cartoons even.
You know, it's so interesting when I do so many of these public appearances, it's talk on the radio and television a lot, and, you know, here's the author of Penis Power, and then there's always the, you know, the giggle, and I always have to say the same thing. It's like a broken record. You have to say that, look, this is the 21st century. Penis is not a pejorative word. Penis is a body part. The penis to the urologist is what the heart is to the cardiologist. You know, get over it.
Get over it.
And there's so much pushback from the mainstream press. It's astounding because the name of the book has penis, the word penis on the cover. It's astounding. You know, 21st century Howard Stern, the vagina monologues, you know, puppetry of the penis.
Right.
You know, if your erection lasts more than 4 hours, call everybody you know. You're on every jersey and every... You know, every car race, every football game, people in bathtubs holding hands, and you know, penis is held in disrespect.
And you address that, and you do it so well. And I love the graphics on the cover. And I always put this the cover of your book along with a summary of our talk today on my website, and it is archived. Do you ever get your patients to listen to an archived show?
Well, I certainly speak about it, and
yeah.
I have you on my website.
Good.
Oh, absolutely. I have a Twitter account, and
yeah.
My son, you know, who's an adult that doesn't do this for a living, helps me a lot with my social media. I'm sort of an older guy. I'm not the greatest on social media,
yeah.
So he helps me a lot. I write lots and lots of blogs, and your listeners can go to penispowerbook.com,
yeah.
My website. There's a lot of good stuff on there. And so we mention you, and I'm very happy that you mention us.
Yes, and I'll put that, of course, in my summary, but penispowerbook.com, where you can read more about Dr. Dudley Danoff. So, going back to your chapter, I think it's fascinating when you talk about the penis paradox, and you do this in my book anyway, the paperback on page 149. The penis paradox, that beginning with an exciting new partner for the first time can sometimes cause temporary penis failure, the way that it can also cause it when you've been with the same partner for a very long time. Can you talk a little more about the penis paradox?
Well, I surely. So, one is related to performance anxiety, and the other is related to the Coolidge effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, with a young and fresh and new relationship, you know, initiating sex and perhaps the first sexual encounter, can be sometimes very unnerving to a man.
Mm-hmm.
Am I up to the performance? Is my penis going to be long enough? Is it going to be firm enough? Is it,
mm-hmm.
You know, any million? And once self-doubt comes in, then penis weakness sets in. So you can have erectile failure in that sense, that is performance anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And completely on the other hand, when you're with a partner, as we mentioned, for a very long time and things are getting stale and boring, i.e. the Coolidge effect, you don't get an erection either. So I call that the penis paradox, or a penis paradox. You know, the end result is the same. The way of getting there is really quite different. So I think that's a paradox.
Well, it is. And I've been interested in how many younger men I have in my practice now, because I live in Seattle, and there are, and younger I'm meaning late 20s, 30s, late 30s, and a lot of men in this area have really good jobs, so they can afford my fee, which isn't covered by insurance. But they're having performance anxiety, which manifests in premature ejaculation and sometimes erectile dysfunction.
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very common in younger men, especially affluent younger men. You see that in middle-aged affluent men, you know, who are captains of industry. They can
mm-hmm.
buy the finest clothes, dine in the finest restaurants, drive the nicest cars, have the nicest looking women attracted to me, and the one thing they can't buy health, and they can't buy the what I call the self-assuredness of penis power. Penis
right.
power is just not for sale. So, you know, in order to get away from performance anxiety, you got to say, I have the power of positive thinking as applied to my penis. It's as good as I think it is. It's as big as I think it is. It's as reliable as I think it is. And you just have to keep hammering away with that.
And you talk a lot about this in your book. For instance, I'm just opening it up. What is a super potent man? You say he's courageous. He's happy. and so on. I mean, this
it's not about the size of your bankroll.
No.
It's not about the size of your penis. No. It's about the size of your heart. It's about the size of your spirit. It's about
the size
of your positive thinking. That's what it's about.
Yeah, the size of your heart and the size of your spirit.
Yeah, and of course, a Platinum American Express card doesn't help. I mean, doesn't hurt either, I could want to add.
Right. But there are, let's face it, some fairly narcissistic men who really can't bring forth enough empathy or compassion for their female partner. And for some of these guys, and I've had a few in my practice, where, some of them are good lovers, but they want that reflected glory back.
So, you know, I have a little section, I know we're not going to touch on it today, which I call Penis Personalities, in which the theory is a man is the same in the bedroom as he is in the boardroom. So if he's sort of a dummy in the bedroom, he's a dummy in the boardroom. But this guy we're describing now, we call him the pompous penis personality. His pomposity is overwhelming. So he may be a great performer, but his pomposity just makes him impossible to be with. So to be a man of what we call penis power, kind of a euphemism, you know, not only do you have to be large of spirit and large of heart, but you have to be willing to share. And you cannot be selfish. It's about selflessness. It's about pleasuring and pleasing your partner. And then in turn, the more you do that, the more you will get pleasure back. It's like giving to charity. It seems, you know, the more you give away, without giving the house away, of course, the more you're going to get back. It's the same principle.
One of the things that makes me so happy to be engaged to Brian is that he has this attitude, and it's reflected very well in this phrase that he says. He says, "Worship your woman, and the goddess will reward you."
I think that's very, very accurate. He said it more poetically than I do, but the concept is the same.
The concept is the same. We are going to go to a break in just a moment, and when we come back, dear listeners, and by the way, I don't usually give this out, but I know Dr. Danoff is happy to speak to any of you that might have a special question on this eve of Valentine's Day, or just any kind of a question. So you're open to that if somebody calls in?
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
That's what I thought. So if any of you want to call in after the break, it would be 888-874-4888. But failing anybody calling in, because people don't usually. I think they're listening, and lots more do listen on the archived versions. But when we come back, Dr. Dudley Danoff and I will talk about the importance, a section in this Chapter 8 that we've been talking about, extenuating circumstances when sex becomes a chore, is spice of life. And so many people facing Valentine's Day are thinking about spice of life. So Dr. Danoff and I will talk about that and also some unpleasant aspects of sex. And so on. So you'll want to stay with us, and we'll be right back. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And Dr. Dudley Danoff, the author of Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And you'll want to go to penispowerbook.com to get additional information. So before the break, we teased you. Well, tease is a good word in terms of the topic, spice of life. And I really am so glad that you addressed in your book with some of your patients. I'm always suggesting, often suggesting, that couples not only have date nights, but what I call an intimacy island vacation. And this can be a time where maybe three times a year, these are people with small children, that they get away and they farm the kids out, and I just feel like couples need to remind themselves that they're not just mom and dad, they're also husband and wife, so they need to reconnect. And you have older patients, as you're more apt to have in your practice, but you're also suggesting the same thing. Rent, like you say on page 150, you told one of your patients to rent a cabin in the mountains for the weekend.
They did. Well, look, as a urologist, like, you know, I cannot emphasize this point enough. You know, you do everything in your power to prevent sex from becoming a dull routine.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but nothing will bring passion or romance back to any long-term relationship faster than a change in sexual practice or venue. So a cabin in the woods, great stuff.
Yeah, and I used to live in Los Angeles. I was born in Los Angeles, actually. You've got Lake Arrowhead, you've got Idlewild, you've got Big Bear, you've got other really nice mountain resorts, fairly close.
Oh, absolutely, sure, absolutely. Palm Springs, Palm Desert, all of the desert communities, San Diego.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This is just a wonderful, easy place to get away.
And, to get away.
A new venue, something fresh, rejuvenates a relationship, almost like the Coolidge effect.
Yes, and I love, Dr. Danoff, the questions that you ask in your book. You ask these, you remind your patients of this. I'm looking at page 153. When was the last time you tried something other than the missionary position? And are you seeing where I'm reading from?
Yes, I do. Yes,
yeah.
I have. Yeah.
So go on and maybe even elaborate on some of your questions, because they're really good questions.
Yeah. So have you tried letting your partner get on top or some other way, or not having intercourse at all, but bringing yourself to climax strictly with oral sex or mutual masturbation? The possibilities are really endless.
Yeah.
And if you can't conjure up some creative ideas on your own, do not be afraid to go out and find a book or
right.
ask a friend for some good tips.
Or see a sex therapist.
Yeah, or that's right, our friend Dr. Wiley.
Well, you know, I'm very interactive with my clients, and I also give my clients things to read.
Right.
And homework assignments like Sensate Focus. But it sometimes seeing a therapist can help people with the language, as seeing you, because a lot of times people are a little uncomfortable with talking about sex and the language of it. And
well, I think it's very important that the listener be receptive and open and non-judgmental
mm-hmm.
and engaging and allow the, you know, the patient or the client to be drawn in, you know, with a sense of warmth, almost like being drawn into a comfortable living room with a big, soft, you know, couch and a nice crackly fire. And if you can get the patient or the client in that mode, you could be very helpful. You can gain their confidence, and they listen. Boy, every word is the gospel.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I find that often they're really listening attentively. And one of the things that I suggest is that if you're in your head, you're not in your body.
That's right. Don't think it through. This is not a calculus exam.
And I think I'm quoting Dr. Fitzpearls. He said, lose your mind and come to your senses.
Exactly. I think that's exactly accurate. You know, it's like trying to play golf and trying to think it through and the mechanics of the swing and the backswing and the follow-through and the weight shift and the shoulder turn. And, you know, when you look at a professional who is smooth and fluid and effortless, he's not thinking of all those things. He's just letting it happen. And it's the same thing with sexuality. It's the same thing with interpersonal relationships. You know, if you think it through sometimes, you can kill it.
You can overthink it.
Overthink it.
I find that a lot of the women I work with who are not able to reach orgasm, they're way too much in their heads, and they're even multitasking during sexual relations.
Gosh, hate when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, so they need to get out of their heads, quiet the monkey mind, which is sort of a Zen idea.
Yes.
With meditation and then to begin the process of letting go and surrendering. And another part of your chapter here reminds me about something else, and that is the unresponsive woman. I'm aware of a survey of more than 500 men about what made a woman a great lover. And do you know what made the top of the list? Enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
Men want their woman to initiate sex more and to let them know what they want.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. I can tell you that the most unpleasant aspect of sex is an unresponsive lover. And that's, or an unresponsive partner. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no question that what makes a penis the hardest, is an enthusiastic lover.
Mm-hmm.
And, an equally conducive environment. So those are the two things that help the most.
Yeah, and a lot of women need some work before they can be enthusiastic or even initiating.
A man has to understand that. A man has to understand it. He must be patient. I mean, that's what being a good lover is about. You have to understand the needs of your partner. And if you don't understand the needs of your partner, then it's your job to find out. Educate yourself. And by educating yourself about the needs of your partner, it will pay you dividends that are unbelievable.
Absolutely. Because then the woman, if she's feeling her partner really understands her and is even vulnerable with her, and that, you know, the man needs to understand he doesn't have to have it all together. He has to be willing to share his fears and feelings and quick to acknowledge his mistakes. Then that opens up the possibility for a woman to be more vulnerable too. But she also feels safe in the relationship. And a woman needs to feel safe and protected in order to really let go and have fabulous orgasms.
I agree with that. But also, by her doing that, she just enhances the man's sexuality, and he becomes even more enthusiastic. That is very, very important. And it's a very delicate balance between being too forward, too forthright, too bossy, and being unresponsive. So it's a very, very delicate balance, and not only on the woman's part, but on the man's part as well.
Yes. Yes. So you see mostly men in your practice. I know you talk in your book about examining vaginas and even vaginal hygiene because let's spend a minute on this. Because I had a recent new client, and he's newly married, and his wife happens to smoke, and maybe you can answer the question, because I couldn't. I know what you eat can affect vaginal juices or male ejaculate, but can smoking affect vaginal juices, do you think?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to that question specifically, but I do know that smoking is not a very good thing if you're having issues with erections, because nicotine is a very potent vasoconstrictor, meaning it narrows blood vessels and diminishes blood flow to the penis. So in terms of, you know, male ED, smoking is a bad thing. Look, personal hygiene is extremely important. And I said the most unpleasant thing in sex is an unenthusiastic lover. That may be the first, but the second certainly is somebody who has poor vaginal or perineal hygiene. I mean, that is a turnoff, for most men for sure. So both men and women have to pay a lot of attention. You know, I cannot speak, you know, to women's issues so much because that is not what I do for a living. But certainly if a male is uncircumcised, mm-hmm. you know, he must retract the foreskin, make sure yeah. it is clean, dry, you know, powder it, sprinkle it with a little nice cologne. You know, absolutely take care of it like it's your face.
So, and I also, women need to absolutely be clean, and I often suggest that couples take a shower together before they make love, or if they have a big enough bathtub, to play in the bathtub.
Absolutely.
And feed each other nuts and dried fruit, and maybe have a little glass of champagne. And
absolutely. This sounds like my grandmother said it wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt.
That's right. It's like it's better than chicken soup.
Well, the bottom line, isn't it true, Dr. D, that sex is play? And so people need to get rid of their problems as much as they can so that they can play more.
That's right.
And have fun and laugh.
Absolutely. You know, somebody said to me, you know, not only is sex fun, but it should be very varied. And they compared it to professional wrestling.
Oh, say more about that.
Yeah, what is the difference between making love and professional wrestling?
What is the difference?
I guess in making loves, no holds, H-O-L-D-S, are barred. I thought that was an excellent.
That's cute.
So yes, what goes on, you know, in the privacy of your own home with your lover, your partner, is between two consenting adults. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, just about anything goes. I mean, obviously there are a few exceptions, and maybe some other time we can talk about those. But anything that's intelligent and safe. Anything goes. Be creative, be interesting, be have fun, jump up and down, stand on your head.
yes.
Okay.
And get away from the idea that sex has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right. I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah. And if couples can do that, play more, then I think it contributes to they're growing together. And I often say to couples, never stop growing together. You know, the stagnant pond breeds malaria, and the flowing stream is always fresh and cool.
Right.
And atrophy is the natural process when you stop working a muscle. We know that.
Absolutely.
Just as it is if you stop working on your relationship. So
yeah.
I love to suggest to my couples that they find common goals and dreams and visions to work towards. And sometimes they need a little bit of medical and psychological help to do that.
You know,
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. And we all make the observation, you know, that we have an aging population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite remarkable. When I started in practice, it was very rare for me to see a 100-year-old person, maybe one a month.
Oh, yes.
And now I see one or two a week. Now, unfortunately, many of them don't know it, but there's a tremendous number of these people that are mentally alert. They may be a little bit frail, so people are living longer, and you've got to extend the sexuality. I mean, I know guys in the 90s who say to me, Doc, oh, if I could just do it one more time, you know, like a teenager. I just want to get it up and in one more time. And, you know,
they have
so
good memories,
they have the
right?
desire. And I think that if you pursue it actively with a meaningful relationship with your partner, your lover, your friend, you can have sexuality well into the ninth decade. And now longer and longer and longer. You know, the 90-year-old couple that's been married 57 years come into my office, you know, as they say, engagé, you know, arm in arm.
Arm in arm.
It's wonderful.
And they're going to live longer even because they're sexual and because they have the love.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And sex is good exercise. Sex is so good for our cardiovascular, for everything.
Muscle, absolutely.
Yeah.
cardiovascular fitness, psychological fitness, emotional fitness,
mm-hmm.
physical fitness, and it's the greatest thing since chopped liver.
Yeah, better than.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
I wanted to you know, we're a little bit on the light side, and I wanted to just touch on one other thing about extenuating circumstances.
Absolutely,
and,
please.
And
do.
You know, about you have to intimidate intimidation. And
that's good. Yes, expand on that.
Yeah, and so there's a very famous old joke, but I put it in a book. So there are two gates to heaven,
mm-hmm.
and one, above one gate is a sign that reads, "All men who are intimidated by women stand in this line."
Yeah.
And there's an endless line of men stretching out from this gate all the way back to the wall. And then on the other gate is the sign, "Men who are never or who are not intimidated by women stand in this line." And there's only one guy in the line.
Yeah.
And he's highly unattractive and intrigued. St. Peter walks up to this lone fellow and says, "Tell me, my son, what qualifies you to be in this line?" And the man replies, "My wife told me to stand here." So it's a great story. Don't be intimidated.
Don't be intimidated. Yeah, you know, if we just communicate more, and I think in general I can say after, I guess I'm coming up on 33 years in practice, that the healthiest, happiest relationships are more egalitarian. There's more equal give and take.
Well, I think equal but different. So,
sure, that's a good, yes, expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, men are men and women are women, so they each have to have their space, but as long as everybody has an equal voice, we don't have to do things equally. I'm married for over 40 years to the same woman, and I'm still very happy and smiling, as you could tell.
Oh, yes, and I met her. She's beautiful and talented.
And she has a world which is completely different from mine. But
yes.
what we do is give each other plenty of space, mutual respect, communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I respect what she does, although I might not understand it half the time. And and she respects what I do, although she doesn't have any idea, you know, what it's like to be in the operating room taking out a kidney tumor the size of a watermelon. But But we, plenty of space, and it's as equal as can be.
Yes. I'm glad you clarified that, because that is an important distinction. Plenty of space. Even the Persian poet who wrote the Prophet Gilbran, he said, "Let there be spaces in your togetherness."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also to be respectful of... Usually people aren't able to really manage this until they're a little bit older, but to respect the other and to be able to differentiate between want and need in a kind of along the lines of, in lots of ways I want you even more than I need you.
Mm-hmm.
I can live without you, but I can live better with you.
And I agree. I mean, it takes maturity and it takes
mm-hmm.
know-how. We have a concept. I have a concept. I call it NEXT, and it goes a little like this.
And how do you spell that?
NEXT.
Okay. Oh, NEXT. Okay.
NEXT. As in next.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
DMV. You're next.
Uh-huh.
So we have an argument or a disagreement. Blah 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 blah. 45 seconds of that, and then 30 seconds later, we just say NEXT, meaning. That's gone. That's yesterday's news. We forgot about that. We agree to disagree, and now it's on to the next thing. Next, without dwelling on the past. Oh, I remember last Tuesday what you said about my mother. you can't do that. You can't dwell on it. You have to have this concept of next. Let's get on to the next thing and forget about any little disagreement or ruffle in the past.
Yes, a lot of folks have trouble with that. And in a first session, I'll often revisit the past with them,
right,
so that there can be better understanding. But to dwell in the past is just not useful. We need to be more in the moment, in the present, and then look toward the future for being healthier.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not to ignore the past. I mean, because if you're going to make the same mistakes that you made in the past, you're doomed to, you know, and not learn by those mistakes. Mm-hmm. You're doomed to make the same mistakes again. So you can learn from your past, but just don't dwell on your past and don't dwell on disagreements and don't dwell on the differences. Try to create the harmonies. That's what I'm looking for.
Oh, the harmonies. That's such... I don't use that word enough, but that's a good word, the harmony.
You have a poetic urologist. Unbelievable.
You do. Yeah, I do. You are poetic. And I could just see, by being with you and your wife in Monterey last June, just, you know, not for too long, but I could see what a special relationship you have where you're... You really admire each other, and
well, it's very kind.
And so, you have fun together. I can see that too.
So I want to just give you a quick little story. I mean, you know, I'm married a very long time, and I met my wife while I was still a surgical resident in New York City. Mm-hmm. And my wife is in the entertainment business, and was actually born in Israel, and has had a long time singing career, and she was performing on Broadway in a show, and we met, and we fell in love, and we went out for a couple of years, and then I came home and decided that I was going to marry her, and I came to my father, and, you know, when I told him who I was marrying, a Yemenite singer, you know, who she was already traveling around the world with her career, and that wasn't exactly his image. My son, my God, he went to Princeton and Yale and Columbia, and he marries a Yemenite singer. But and all of our friends and family said this won't last, you know, 20 minutes. So completely disparate backgrounds, and the things that we had in common. You know, the eye of the beholder, beauty. I thought she was beautiful. I guess she thought I was nice looking. Intelligence and integrity. So, you know, what more can you have? So if you're physically attracted or mentally attracted, and you're honest, as honest as you can be, and you have integrity, and you're intelligent in your approach to your relationship, how can it fail?
And that's a good note on which to end this program. We have to end a little bit before the top of the hour. But so as we approach Valentine's Day, and we hope that people, if you have a Valentine's Day, a Valentine, treat her well or him well. And if you don't, think about some of the things that Dr. D just spoke about, that you want to approach, and some of the things we've talked about in this last hour, that you want to have good communication, be vulnerable, have integrity. And if you're not there yet, you might need a little extra help. Don't be afraid to get it, right, Dr. D?
Absolutely, and read the book.
Oh, and that's the final thing. Yeah. Reading the book will really help. It has helped so many of my clients, and I think a lot of you listeners, because Dr. Dudley Danoff has been my guest. Well, I need to count it up. This is either the fourth or the fifth time. But
well, as I said at the top of the show, I said, who's counting? I'm having so much fun.
Oh, that's great. Well, we'll do it again, I hope, in a couple or 3 months.
Why not?
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. D.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dee, and I really appreciate the hour.
You're welcome. And so, everybody, please go to, I'll write it up, but go to penispowerbook.com for more information. And I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Bye, everybody.